Welcome to a new episode of Product Directions Podcast, 100 Product Strategies. We are your insider access to top product leaders shaping the strategy of the most diverse industries today. I'm your host, Nacho Vassino, and I'll be digging into the real-life situations, problems, and frameworks used for strategy with product people all around the world in all kinds of products and markets. While there is no recipe for success, listening to others' experiences may give you the edge you need to solve your next strategic challenge. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode. I'm really happy today because I'm with Bruce McCarthy. He's the author of maybe the most well-known book on roadmaps, product roadmaps relaunched, and also a speaker. And he also helps companies with their product practices. So, Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Nacho. It's good to be here.
I assume most people listening to this will know who you are, but for those who don't, can you give us a bit introduction about yourself and mostly what you are doing these days?
Sure. Like most of you, I'm a longtime product person. I came up through software companies, small, large, through a couple of acquisitions. For the last 10 years, I have been working with companies all over the world on product practices, on hiring the right people, building the team, building the skills in the team, setting up the right structure, the right processes. My job is to be an advisor and help people and teams get better at the practice of what product is. And so I do this with my team at a small company called Product Culture. We've been expanding over the last year. The team is now 6 people, and we're working with companies in the US, Europe, Asia Pac, wherever product is needed.
So today, unsurprisingly, I want to explore the connection between strategy and roadmaps and how those two are interconnected. But I also know that you are working on a new book on alignment. So I will love to explore a bit of that. And maybe to get started, that's my first question. When we think about strategy, one of the hard challenges that I have been discussing with product leaders is that even aligning on the inputs for strategy is difficult. So what are the priorities, kind of different conflicting priorities between different departments and things like that? So maybe on that start of the process, do you have any tips on how do you align the inputs, the priorities, the diagnosis we may have about different areas?
First, I want to say that it's refreshing just to hear you say you want to start with strategy. When people think about roadmaps, and when I first work with companies and they show me their roadmap or they ask me to help them with a workshop on roadmapping, first of all, they tend to only include the product people, the product managers. Maybe they'll bring somebody from engineering in if I ask, and nobody else from any of the rest of the business. And second, their conception of a roadmap is, well, it's a list of features and when we plan to ship those features. And that's really the limit of it. But I really feel like you cannot articulate why you are putting together whatever it is that's on your roadmap until you have articulated a strategy. And in my mind, the classic roadmap slide of a grid with time and maybe some swim lanes and some stuff that you're going to be doing or shipping is the last slide, is kind of the detail slide or the summary slide of a deck that articulates your strategy, because the two should be one. The roadmap is a summary, essentially, of your strategy in time. And so I like to begin with, well, if we're making a map of where we're going, where are we going? That's where we begin. What's the destination? Let's agree on what our vision is, right? And when we begin with a vision, I don't mean a vision of this precise device that has some specs and works like this and so on. I mean a vision of a world where the customer has more success, more happiness, more power, more enablement than they had before. It's a description of value for a particular customer. we're going to solve this problem and that will make this customer super powerful and successful and awesome. Like Kathy Sierra said, they'll be badass. if we can describe that, and then we can put the business dimension around that, and we will be successful because we have made the customer successful. Then we can make a roadmap that gets us there. It's a roadmap to somewhere because we have described the destination. And we can describe what should be measurably improving as we go there. And so we can put some metrics on it. Maybe it gets written down as OKRs. Mm-hmm. Or some other metrics, both the business side metrics like revenue, number of customers, margin, things like that, and the customer side metrics like we're saving them time or we're increasing their productivity or we're reducing friction in their day or some other measurable thing that says we're on the right track from the business side and from the customer side. And then you begin to put together these components of, okay, we have a vision, we have objectives, and we have a sequence of problems to solve to achieve those objectives and arrive at that vision. Those are the rough components of a roadmap that we describe in the Product Roadmaps book. And sometimes when I walk through that kind of exercise, or I see the output of an exercise like that with companies, the results are, they're a little too easy. You know, it's like, oh, they get it done in a few hours and it's all beautiful and it looks great. And usually the roadmap consists of just loads of things, just tons of things. And the number of OKRs is like 12. And the vision statement is a page long. And so they basically just spent a lot of time throwing everything they could think of onto paper without attempting to prioritize or focus or look for whether there is alignment on the team. Yeah. I once saw a company's business canvas. They'd put together a business canvas of the focused things that they said that they were focused on. And the number of objectives in one of the boxes in the business canvas, business objectives, for a quarter, not for the year, but for a quarter, was like 14. And so they wanted to move this and this and this and this and this. They wanted to get everything done. And they had basically broken it up by department. Every department had two or three of their own objectives, and then they just added them up and put them in into the canvas. And that's not a strategy. So it's a strategy is not just what would we like to do, but where are we going to focus? And so what are we going to say no to in order to be able to focus on that?
Yeah. That's a very good point because it goes exactly in the direction I wanted to cover. Because if you are putting each desire of each department into the roadmap, basically you have, I mean, it's an easy way to gain alignment. Hey, we are making everyone happy. At the end of the day, we have no results and then everyone will be unhappy, but it's kind of still equal. But let's say in this podcast, we have been discussing a lot about focusing, about selecting and whatnot. And that's where the things got complicated. If you say, hey, we need to put, instead of 14, we need to put 5 things so we can select only things from 3 or 4 departments, then the alignment becomes a bit more challenging. So maybe the question goes in the direction of how do you explore as a product leader or what do you recommend the product leader do in order to expose and get people aligned?
Right. So this is hard. But if you are trying to, you first have to make sure you have the right people in the room. Again, it can't just be the product person by themselves or the product team alone. And so if I'm doing this kind of process, I want to start with the executive team and I want to get the entire executive team into a room, all the functions. I've been working with this one company over the past couple of years on their OKRs at the company level and all the way down through the product and engineering teams as well. And the OKRs for the business are the starting place. And we did a vision exercise, and we did a long-term OKRs, and we did, okay, how about this year and this quarter? What do we want to focus on? And we had the entire executive team there, including HR, finance, everybody. And at first, along the lines of what we've been discussing, they came up with pretty much one OKR for each department.
Basically.
And so we came out with seven OKRs for the quarter that we were going to be working on. And I said to them, this is too many. You cannot have seven. As a team, you cannot focus on seven. But they had no mechanism for choosing. And they insisted that they could do it by dividing and conquering. They would each one would be owned by somebody in the room, and they would do it. And I decided to let them experience what that was like. So for a quarter, they attempted to get going on this, and the average amount of success that they had was something like 25% of progress on across the board. Some of them were at zero, and I don't think any of them were 100%. And so we got together again a quarter later, and we discussed, okay, how do we, what do we learn from this? And they were like, okay, yeah, we can't do seven. You were right. How many can we do? And I said, well, in my way of thinking about it, the maximum is probably three. And we worked really hard, and we got it down to four for that quarter. And then the next quarter, they still didn't do very well. So we got it down to three. And here was the really interesting part. They started taking it even further. Today, they have one for the entire organization that the executive team cross-functionally is focused on. And they don't even just do that for a quarter. They do it usually for two or three quarters until they really nail it. And so I'm really proud of the progress that they have made to focus. So partly they just had to learn by doing and not succeeding. Yeah. They needed to experience it. But here was the, once they were willing to engage in the exercise of, okay, we recognize we need to narrow down and focus, the technique that I think listeners can borrow is to ask the team to prioritize, is to ask them to say, okay, suppose out of these list of seven or however many things, we could only do one. Which one would you pick? And ask everybody in the room to pick independently. And I mean, a workshopping technique is to ask them all to do it silently and to write it down so they're not influencing each other. And then to explain why they picked the one that they picked. When we did this exercise with this team, there were a couple of them that nobody picked that fell off the list right away, and that was super helpful. And there were a couple of them that got two or three votes, which was great, but there was still a lot of spread, and it was mostly departmental. The marketing person really wanted to work on marketing efficiency. Surprise, surprise. The support and services person really wanted to get their resource utilization and their customer satisfaction into better shape. Not surprising. But what needed to happen was for the team as a whole to come together and decide, out of all the things we could and probably should be working on, is there one that A, is most leveraged for the company's success, and B, actually requires some cross-functional cooperation to make it work, isn't just really an internal efficiency or effectiveness measure for a given department. You know, marketing should always be working on cost per lead. That's not a cross-functional OKR. It's just something they should always be working on as a part of their craft, right? Actually, the thing that really got them, that really helped them, was that they had a series of outages. There's a SaaS business. They had a series of outages over the course of a month, and their customers were really upset, and understandably. And the CEO just stood up in one of our meetings where we were talking about OKRs and said, you know, before we get to this OKR stuff, we just have to solve this problem of outages. Customers are losing confidence in us, and we need to fix that. And I think there are three things that we need to do to fix that. Mm-hmm. And he listed the three things off. And there was silence in the room. And I said, I think we just figured out our OKRs.
Yeah.
You know, we need to restore confidence in the stability of the platform. And here are the three things that we're going to do to make that happen. And lo and behold, that was the right focus.
That's interesting because I have many topics of what you mentioned I want to ask about, but I think those scenarios are usually easier. I mean, it doesn't need to be the CEO. I mean, if kind of we all recognize that this is a hard problem, it's easy to align and say, hey, let's set our priorities apart and focus on that one. But beyond these crisis moments, as you said, kind of we will have conflicting goals because marketing will try to increase market share or reduce cost per lead or whatever, and operations want other things. And even if you think about it from a product perspective, probably we are trying to help on both sides. So we're trying to make our onboarding process better so we can have a better acquisition cost. And we're trying to help the tooling for support so customers are happier. So on those instances, you mentioned something like the most companies don't have a strong prioritization framework. Kind of they are different departments have different goals and then they run with them. And then this is conflictive. So yeah, maybe full stop there. Any thought on that?
Well, I'm a big proponent of a prioritization framework. We describe in the Product Roadmaps book five different frameworks that you might use in different circumstances. I like a scorecarding method that's, you know, you input your objectives and you score different things you might choose to do against those objectives and some level of effort and your confidence, and you get out a relative ranking that allows you to sort a long list of ideas or problems to solve against each other in terms of what is the likely return on investment of working on those things. I think that's really, really effective in working your backlog. But it's sometimes it's just a little esoteric, a little spreadsheety, a little nerdy for a cross-functional executive team. And what I find there is the scorecard mechanism is great for a list of, you've got 200 feature requests and you need to just sort through these things, right? Where it's not so great is we have seven things that the executive team wants to work on and we need to pick one or two. That's where you really need to get into a robust debate. And where if somebody says, I think that the most important thing we can focus on is margin, and somebody else says, I think the most important thing we can focus on is growth, then you need to be able to discuss that. Because those two obviously have a push and a pull, right? You can grow faster by giving away margin. You can spend more on marketing, or you can discount, or you can do lots of things that will cause you to grow faster, but you will give up margin because you're spending money to do it. Or you can increase margin by raising prices or reducing marketing costs, but your growth will slow, right? So it's a push and a pull. So you've got to have a debate and an agreement on those, on something like that, where it's an obvious trade-off between one and the other. Why would we do this now versus another? There are frameworks you can apply, like, you know, three horizons or the rule of 40 or what have you, or, you know, where should we be at series B versus series C or D or something like that. But really it's about the discussion and the debate. And maybe as an individual contributor product manager, you can't go to your executive team and say, you guys need to debate margin versus profitability versus growth. But as the CPO, you're a member of that team. And So you can say, guys, I want to be able to give direction to my team about how to prioritize feature work versus improving the UX in onboarding, versus reducing server costs, versus mm-hmm. scalability. But I don't know what to tell them because we have no clear articulation of strategy and goals.
Yeah.
So I need to come out of this. I need to come out of our executive team meeting with us all aligned on what are the objectives right now. And how are we going to measure success other than just revenue this year?
Yeah. Love that. Love that. So it's basically the two things that you covered. Maybe to summarize is that having an agreed upon framework to use, even as a scorecard or other method like Three Horizon or whatever, but just kind of agreeing on how we are deciding, I think it's very, provides a lot of clarity on drive the discussion. And the second one is that some product leaders feel that they need to make a decision and influence others around their decisions. And that's not the case. I mean, especially in these complex situations, it's much better to
it's a team bring people sport, together. I think, right? Yeah. It's not tennis, it's football. It's everybody's got to be in tight coordination if we're going to win the game.
Yeah, yeah. One interesting question to that is that so I'm biased here, but most companies tend to go into those discussions and enter a kind of battle of opinions instead of being a bit more evidence guided.
Yeah.
So, for example, with the scorecard, it's rather easy to say, no, for me, this is a 5. Oh, for me, this is a 7. This is a 4. So, going back to my original question, I'm struggling or I see product leaders struggling to put this evidence together and to align on the inputs and align not only on the selected priorities, but on, okay, what's our diagnosis? How are we seeing the current reality and basing that reality on facts rather than mere opinions? So, just want maybe any thoughts on that?
I mean, my Twitter handle is data driven. So I'm
nice.
Big believer
in,
I'm a big believer in getting the data, right? The facts. Mm-hmm. And that's great. But facts can be interpreted in multiple ways. And you don't usually have all the facts you would ideally like to have, all the data you would ideally like to have to make a decision. And it's wasteful to try to wait until you get every last thing figured out because the market opportunity will pass. And so you're always operating, and some data is qualitative rather than quantitative, especially in B2B, where the number of customers that you have is much smaller than in B2C. And so running an A/B test on something where you only have 100 customers doesn't really make any sense. Trying to measure the renewal rate when your customers are in the hundreds and the contract length is 2 or 3 years. Again, it's just, you can't do that. So there's unfortunately a lot of places where we are relying a bit on opinion. And so, I think there's some process you can put around this in order to manage this gap, this fact gap, if you will. One is, let's start with the scorecarding. I like to really make the scorecarding numbers really simple. We describe when you're using a scorecarding method in the Product Roadmaps book that I like a scale not of 1 to 10 or 1 to 100 or real dollars or something like that, but instead just 0, 1, or 2. So basically that is small, medium, large effect. We think we will move the needle on this particular goal, not very much, some, or a lot. Mm-hmm. And that sort of acknowledges up front that we're working on opinion and it's that our knowledge of the future is fuzzy. It doesn't introduce false precision where, okay, the average score on this was a 7.9 and the average score on this other thing was 7.8. So the answer is obvious, right? You just don't have that kind of precision. So when you, what you're looking for in that kind of a scorecarding is a very rough sort. We have a list of 200 ideas and we want to look at the ones that would, at least according to opinion, be most likely to be highly leveraged. They're less work and we think a lot of effect for that work. So they rise up to the top, and then we can attempt to look for more factual evidence on those 10.
Perfect.
Instead of trying to really do a bunch of research on 200 things, and we'll run out of time or budget. So it's a rough sort of tool. That gets you there while not fooling yourself into thinking you're being falsely precise. And then you can do some validation. So if we're going to start with opinion, we still need to validate those opinions. Mm-hmm. At that point, I would do kind of a risk assessment. I would say, all right, out of these top 10, the ones we're really thinking hard about, can we map our assumptions about who the customer is, what the value is to them, and whether we have, you know, the usual feasibility, viability, desirability sort of things. Can we map those versus how much evidence do we actually have that our assumptions are correct? And David Bland has a terrific rubric for this. It's a 2x2 grid, and you map the importance of the assumptions. If this is wrong, then this idea is a terrible idea, versus how much evidence you have. And the things that have high importance and low evidence, you should go and validate. You should do some sort of research with customers to see if you're on the right track before you invest a lot of money in them.
So I love that. Sorry.
Those are a couple of techniques that you can put a little bit of process around fact light situations.
Yeah. I love that, because most of these discussions about going back to the rubric or whatever, some kind of this is 3 or 4, whatever, boils down to we have different assumptions about the world. And
right.
we can have different assumptions, it's all right. But if we can kind of visualize those, express them, and discuss over the assumptions rather than fight our views of the world.
Right. That's the utility, I think, of the scorecard. Is people argue with scorecarding, they say you're asking the math to make decisions for you. And it's an artificial exercise because it doesn't take into account a lot of real world considerations. And that's all true. But the spreadsheet's not supposed to make the decision. It's supposed to provide structure to a conversation about assumptions with your stakeholders.
Yeah. It's about having better discussions. All artifacts are about having better discussions.
Right.
All right. So we have discussed at length how to, or maybe those situations in which we have conflicting priorities. When we mentioned a couple of times this call of ideas and things like that, do you have any point of view on, in terms of a strategy, I would call it the flight level, but more kind of focusing on problems versus going back to ideas? Because usually when stakeholders, I mean, not stakeholders, all humans want to kind of talk about solutions and try to jump to that. So I know in roadmaps you cover a bit of that. So any point of view for this type of discussion in strategic selection, how to cover it?
I think it's really important to ask the why question. And I think there are a variety of ways that you can ask it. I think it's important when dealing with a stakeholder who says, I think we should do X, they're coming to you with an idea, to give them the benefit of the doubt that... Because I think it's easy as product people, we have our current roadmap, we have the ideas that we think are appropriate, we're operating a bit on opinion, and some executive who's not super deep into the weeds of our product or our process has some idea that just doesn't match up with our initial thinking, it's easy for us to be just like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, and I'm just going to bite my tongue and try not to yell at them, right? Instead, I think we want to be genuinely curious. I think you can ask the same exact question in a genuinely curious way or in a sort of contemptuous way, right? We're supposed to ask 5 levels of why, right? We're supposed to say, okay, you think that this is a good idea, tell me why. And you can ask it in a sort of neutral way, like I asked it, or you can say, really, why? or you can say, oh, that's interesting. Tell me more.
Mm-hmm.
What prompted this idea? If we do this, what do you think will be the result? What do you think will change for the customer or for the business? Or even you can just be completely honest. Huh? Okay. We agreed that our main goals were X, Y, and Z. I'm not immediately seeing how they support that, but tell me.
Uh-huh.
And let the other person absorb some of your curiosity and help you see what they see.
Yeah.
That's the goal, is not to put them in a defensive position, but instead to help, to make it so that they can help you see what they see. Yeah. Even if that turns out to not fit your rubric, even if it turns out you need to correct some wrong assumptions on their part, you get permission to tell them what you think if you start by really giving them the opportunity to tell you what they think.
Yeah.
Acting in a sympathetic way, and you're really listening.
And it connects back to what we were just discussing, because at the end of the day, you are seeing their idea or their comment through the lens of your assumptions and your understanding of the world. And maybe they have some other assumptions that you have not considered, and they are kind of
exactly
worth
right. I'll give you an example. So my first month as head of product at this company, I went about doing exactly the kind of process we're talking about. I knew that there were a whole bunch of things that were either projects in process or projects people thought were in process or thought should be in process or wanted to add to the list. And I went to every key stakeholder around the business, and I quickly made a spreadsheet of 75 things that we and I mean that literally, 75 things. And our team was 6 people, right? So obviously we were not going to work on 75 things at the same time. So I needed a method to prioritize. And we had just been to a board meeting where the executive team articulated the 4 key objectives for the year for the company. I'm like, perfect. So I'm going to put this into my formula, going to sort everything and score it. It's going to be awesome. And as I started going through doing my preliminary scoring, I went to each stakeholder in turn, and I talked with them about, how would you score this? This is how I'm scoring this. This is why. And what do you think? And people kept coming back to me with, this thing that's scoring really low, I really think we should do that. I think it needs to be higher. And I'm like, okay, tell me why. And they couldn't really attach it to the objectives that we had articulated to the board. And so that's why it was scoring low. Until finally, behind closed doors, the CFO told me, we're going to be going for another round of financing in a few months. And it would be great if we could be in the press and generate some buzz. So everything that people, not just the CFO, but also the CEO and the head of sales had been trying to push up the list were things that would be highly visible and get us some publicity. And all of a sudden it made sense. And I realized there was a hidden objective that nobody had articulated, which was, we need to have a successful investment round in a few months. And so once we included that as an additional objective, it all made sense. All the scoring, everything moved where it should be, and everyone was aligned pretty easily. I think it's important to have a feedback loop between your initial model and, discussions with your stakeholders about assumptions. About the objectives and what, and when things don't score the way you think they should, don't fudge the numbers. Ask why they don't score the way you think they should.
I have seen so many times teams falling into the same kind of discussion trap with the stakeholders just because there was a missing dimension on the scorecard that they needed to be included. And, and to the point of what you were mentioning about this press release, also I have encountered this a couple of times. And it's actually nice because product people get obsessed about saying, hey, they are pushing for this feature that adds no user value, that won't move any metric. And when you understand the reasoning behind it, you stop caring about the user value and say, hey, I will do this, the simplest version I can do about this to just tick the box and be on the press release, and then I can keep focusing on user value. So it's just win-win for everyone.
Right. And so there's room in your strategy for tick box features if they get you into the magic quadrant with the analyst, or they get you to win the RFP, or they get you into the press. If those things match up with your overall strategy, those particular things, even if they don't add a lot of user value.
Yeah, absolutely. There is one other difficult scenario that we didn't cover, because we will touch about the a lot of the typical common problems, but one I also see commonly happening, which also creates these misalignments or difficulty in alignment, is when top company goals are just too broad. Like, hey, we are focusing on revenues, on customer satisfaction, and on reducing cost. So basically you are covering any feature in the world can match to those three, and any stakeholder can justify how their idea will add up to those metrics. So any recommendation for product leaders in these situations?
Yeah, that is a common situation. And I think the thing you want to focus on is not actually adopting those as the team's own metrics and OKRs, those high level revenue or satisfaction ones, but instead picking what I would call proxy metrics or leading indicators that the product team actually can have an effect on that is measurable in some reasonably short period of time, ideally within the month or the quarter, rather than things that move really slowly, like renewal rates or margins or even revenue that takes a whole year really to play out, and that the product team is only one contributor to. If you're B2C and your product is an app, and in-app purchases are the main source of revenue, and so usage and revenue are directly tied in that way, that's a simple case, and the product team really can affect revenue in the short term, and they could use that. But that's not the majority case.
No.
In B2B, in B2C, where it's about things that move more slowly, like Netflix and renewal rates, for example, you've got to use proxy metrics that are measurable by the product team, affectable by the product team, and move fast enough that they can learn from results of what they're doing so that they can adjust course and they can keep iterating. Using Netflix as an example, Gib Biddle describes that the main North Star metric that they really always cared about while he was VP of product there was churn or renewal, which is the opposite. And that was really hard for them to affect. Their renewal rate was 90 something percent, and getting it from 93 to 94 was nearly impossible, but they were always working at it. And what they recognized was that what drove people to churn was if they weren't really using it, if they weren't watching a lot of Netflix. So all of their strategies were about finding ways to encourage people to watch more Netflix. And all of their metrics were about how much are they watching, or how much are they using a particular new feature or new capability. So they would measure, but it was all indirect. So they would say, okay, we're gonna do original programming, and our metric for success for the original programming, which they now do but didn't originally, is going to be how many original Netflix series, how many hours of that do you watch in a week on average? And we wanna see that number go from here to here over time. If we do that, we think we'll have a long-term effect on the renewal rate. When they have their interactive choose your own adventure stuff like Kimmy Schmidt come out, they wanted to measure how much engagement there was with that. And when they briefly, because I don't think they do this anymore, had party mode where you and people that you, your friends in their own houses could be watching a movie at the same time. Again, they wanted to measure usage. Because the product team could affect it by coming out with new features and capabilities or content, and they believed it was correlated. Yeah. So that's what the product team needs to be looking for always, is those correlates that, and this is tricky, they have to not only come up with something that they believe is correlated, but something that other people believe is correlated too.
Yeah.
That is, the they have to convince the executive team that they're working on the right stuff.
Yeah.
And that their measures of success are right. Suppose something else happens and renewal rates begin to dip, because people are price sensitive, there's a downturn in the economy or something, or Amazon Prime is coming out with so much great stuff that they're losing people to the competition. And the product team is saying, yeah, but our proxy metrics are looking great. Well, that's not a really great answer. You need to be able to get buy-in alignment with your key stakeholders on what the right proxy measures are, so that when you have an argument about should it be original content or should it be reruns of Gunsmoke or something, then you can say, well, according to the data that we have of the proxy measures, the one thing is more effective than the other.
Yeah. I mean, the tools and tactics are the same that we discussed before for other scenarios. So I think that's a good summary. Okay. And we're running out of time, but I do really want to ask you about roadmaps, and have two questions, but I will combine it in one so we can cover it fast. So the first one is, strategy usually, or strategic intent at least, is a bit higher level. So there's a work to be done in order to translate this. Hey, we are focusing on this direction in order to jump to roadmap. So what tools do you usually typically recommend to connect those two words? And then the other one is pretty much related, is how you cover uncertainty over time of roadmaps. Because we can pretty easily define this quarter, but maybe longer is a bit more difficult.
Well, like I said, I kind of feel like a roadmap and a strategy are not two separate things. Mm-hmm. They're two reflections of the same underlying thing, that you have agreement on the direction that we're going and the main things that we need to accomplish to get to that destination. So the roadmaps book could have been much shorter if we just said, okay, here's a template and here's how you fill it out. instead, we started talking about, you need to understand your customer and your market, and you need to have a strategy, and here's how you articulate it. So I feel like they're the same thing. And if you're mm-hmm. a product leader and you feel like there isn't a product strategy and you need to make sure that there is one, then it's got to be a process with all the functions coming together to articulate what is the future that we want to make, what does that look like? And what do we need to do as a whole business to make that happen? And maybe that sounds like, well, that's the CEO's job, that's not my job, we just build stuff. But that's, I think, a very narrow view of product. And I'm not saying that you need to usurp the CEO's role, but you do need to be the person, I think, if it's not already happening, who pulls the team together and says, look, I need a product strategy and I need to base it in the business strategy. So can we work together to articulate a clear business strategy of which product is a component? And at the end of that deck of how we're going to make this future world come to be, there is a roadmap table. Mm-hmm. There is a single slide that summarizes all of that. So that, I think that was your first question, is how do we tie those two things together?
Maybe one follow-up question to that before we jump to the other one. What I typically see is that maybe sometimes strategy is something that, or the strategic intent again, because strategy can be many different things, is said as something that is very high level. So for example, we will expand into this new user segment or something like that. So then the roadmap needs to explain, okay, how we are going to actually do that. Right. And usually what I see is that it's very easy to align with strategy. Hey, everyone understands that this is a big customer segment. We need to go there. Our competitors are not tapping into it, blah, 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 big opportunity. So that's easy to nod and say yes. But then when you go into the details, then you get a bit more back and forth. So that was maybe kind of this connection, not only kind of right. making sense the match, but yeah.
So I would consider any statement like that, like we need to go into this new user segment or this new adjacency of some sort, as at least a component of a strategy. Mm-hmm. It's one step along the way toward an ultimate destination, I hope. And it's a reasonable, suppose that we've, you know, done some intel, somebody has a reason for thinking that that's a good next step is to move mm-hmm. into this space. I do think you could do an opportunity solution tree with your team, like Teresa Torres would recommend, yeah. and see, are there other opportunities that are like that, that we would, that would be better or less attractive to pursue next, and so we could compare them. And then supposing we had narrowed it down to one that we think is the most candidate, the best candidate, I do think it's still a candidate. And as Teresa would probably say, you want to go and test your assumptions. We can do that mapping again of assumptions versus risk, mm-hmm. and we can try to, as a product function, as a discipline, we can say, great, we're going to, this seems like something we're all excited about. We're going to go and de-risk this. We're going to go and test some assumptions before we just go off and give you a roadmap of everything we think we need to build. We're going to test the assumptions that A, this is an attractive market, B, we can win in it, and C, we know what it's going to take to win
yeah.
in it.
Yeah.
The roadmap would come out of that. You might, I had this great conversation with Steve Blank about this when writing the book. You might consider putting together a rough high-level roadmap in advance before you've done the validation as a way of, as a tool in doing the validation. You might take a rough and ready roadmap for what you think you need to build in order to, or solve for, in order to capture this market, and go to some customers in that market and say, if we build this, will you buy it? And you need to get people to, you know, basically, if this is B2B, sign a letter of intent or a pre-order or something like that.
Yeah.
And if they won't do that, well, then you have to question whether you really have an opportunity there. Or you need to rearrange your vision of what it will take to reach that.
Yeah, got it.
That there's some techniques for pulling those things together. What was your second question?
I think it goes in this direction. I think we may have covered it, but it's about the uncertainty in the roadmap. So kind of how would you display that?
I think the one of the central things that we tried to explain in the book is that everything in product is kind of uncertain, and people in other functions don't like to hear that from us. They like to feel like it's just like manufacturing. Like you build widgets, you know how long it takes to build the widgets. Can we speed it up just a little bit? Or it's like hiring a contractor to put an addition on your house. They do an estimate, they do a design, you approve the design, they do the work, they hire all the subcontractors, it's scheduled, it's budgeted, and maybe there's a little bit of an overrun, but it's fairly cut and dried. What they're not recognizing is that, A, there's a lot of uncertainty in the estimates when you're talking about software, because you're building something almost every time for the first time. Nobody has ever built exactly what you're building before, whereas lots of people have built garages before, right, to add onto your house. And so there's an inherent uncertainty just in the project, but there's even greater uncertainty in whether or not you will be successful on the first try in solving the customer's problem and making them want to buy from you. So you can do a bunch of research up front, you can do a bunch of prototyping, and hopefully that de-risks it, but there's still the possibility that on with version one, that the customer's gonna be like, well, it's interesting, but, And then you're going to have to figure out what to do about the but.
Yeah.
So the uncertainty piece, I like to do two things to really manage the uncertainty piece. One is to set the goal to be success rather than simply built, right? We're going to agree on what will be different with the customer and with our business once this thing is out there. And until we hit that different, until we can measure that the customer is successful and we are successful, we're not done. Even if we've shipped something.
Yeah.
So the goal is different than we just shipped. And two, there's a whole chapter in the book about themes rather than features being the meat of the roadmap. A theme is a problem to be solved for the customer, mm-hmm. or a job to be done or something like that. That is the hole you're trying to fill rather than the plug you're planning to put into the hole. It is not a prescription for a particular feature. It is the problem statement or the user story writ large that you're trying to design a solution for. And you may have to try a few different things before you find the right solution. Or you might have a list of 10 things that all of which you're pretty confident will contribute to the solution, but you're not sure which of the 10 things you're going to be able to fit into the quarter. They're the most feasible most effective. So your list of 10 features that are inside that feature, if you will, may change over time.
Yeah.
And you can manage the uncertainty in the roadmap by saying, okay, we're 100% sure that we're going to do something to solve this for this theme in this quarter, but the exact details of precisely what we're going to ship, we will be able to say with more certainty over time.
Yeah, yeah. And the good thing about including the options is that stakeholders can be worried about, hey, is my idea being considered? And then when they see it there, at least without any promises, they still know that it's
My favorite conversation to have is when you put up a roadmap full of themes with problems to solve, is that the customer, like you said, they intuit that, oh, their feature might be a solution to that problem. And so they ask you, are you going to do my feature? And you say, we are considering it. Can you tell me why you want that particular solution and why you think it's better than other things that we are considering? And that way you're doing your market research and your validation with the customer. And they may tell you something you didn't know about why this is a better solution, or you may tell them things that they hadn't considered about alternative solutions. And it's going to be a great conversation either way.
Exactly. Again, it's about enabling better conversations. So, all right. We have covered a lot of ground. I will ask my typical closing question before we say goodbye is some learning about strategy that you have along these years in your career that we didn't cover so far.
For me, the biggest learning has been that a lot of companies don't have one. they don't have a strategy. They don't have a company strategy or a product strategy. When I ask, what's your strategy? They say, well, we're going to try to grow 40% this year. And I said, okay, that's great. That's a metric. How are you going to do that? And if you do that, where does that put you in your long-term journey? And a lot of times people just haven't articulated that. There's two cases. One case is they really haven't thought about it at all. They just assumed that the whole job is just grow as fast as you can every year and good things will happen. Or they have thought about it, but they haven't shared it with the team. It's super common for companies just out of the startup phase and into the scale-up phase to have hired lots and lots of people, most of whom are brand new, and have never really systematically articulated, this is our vision, this is our strategy, these are our values, these are the metrics we care about as a company. all those things that I described that go into a good roadmap, they haven't articulated that because it wasn't necessary during the first 5 years of the company's life when there were under 100 employees and everybody knew each other and everybody was just going and getting stuff done. But at the point where you get to 150, 200 employees or more, you really need to actually tell these people what's what, or they'll just make something up. They'll just assume that whatever it was that they used to do in their old company applies here.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting because I also hear this from product leaders as well, that you are so ingrained in these discussions day in, day out, that you don't may not even recognize that these new people or these people who is kind of a few degrees of apart from you may not have that same context that you have, and then just, you need to evangelize. Yeah. So.
I was talking with a CEO the other day, and he was articulating a strategy fairly clearly to me, I thought. And I had previously talked to the CPO, and the CPO didn't have a clear picture of what was in the CEO's head. So it's not as uncommon as you might think.
Very interesting. Bruce, this has been wonderful. I want to ask you, maybe you can briefly summarize your upcoming book, will be released soon. So can you give us a few words on what's that about?
Sure. The book is about the soft skills that we've really been discussing in the background of all of this, of aligning stakeholders around your organization. And it's really for product leaders who want to get outside of just talking with engineering and design all the time to the rest of the organization and make sure that all the dots are connected and that all the rest of the all the rest of the functions and the leaders of those functions are aligned around this common vision. It's about how to be the leader of that team of people crafting a strategy, a product council or a roadmap review team or whatever you want to call it. It's called Aligned, Stakeholder Management for Product Leaders. It's coming out from O'Reilly in May, sometime this year. We've just finished a rough draft of the whole thing, and O'Reilly's copy editors are looking at it now. I already know 100 things that I want to add or modify in the book. But if you're interested in following along this journey, and we put together what was initially, I called it an early readers club. And if you go to productculture.com under writing and media, you'll see Aligned Book Club. And you can join. It's like $20 a month. And it's turned into a community of practice of people who, sure, they get to read the early versions of the book that we've been writing and comment on them and stuff like that. But every month, we meet to workshop everyone's stakeholder challenges. So it's really a kind of a self-help club group coaching sort of situation.
Yeah, and a very, very needed skill. So I think that's great. And we will include the links in the show notes.
Cool.
Anything else that the audience need to know about where to find you or how to collaborate with you?
Productculture.com is the place to go. My Twitter handle, X handle, is data-driven, D8_driven, if you want to follow me there, or follow me on LinkedIn. Actually, I post more on LinkedIn these days.
All right. Thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, thanks for the great questions. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this episode of 100 Product Strategies, the podcast by Product Direction. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Instagram to get access to free weekly content that helps product people upgrade their skills and become more successful. You can access more material, promotional trainings, and be notified of every episode of the show with Product Direction's weekly newsletter. Join thousands of product leaders by registering in productdirection.co.